We can share. All right, we're going to pull this meeting together. So everybody who's on the board, would you please come and take your seat? Then we're going to take a roll call. Amanda, would you please take a roll call?
Yes, at this time, I am only asking those board members attending in person to respond by saying "here" when I call your name. As a reminder, you can unmute your microphones by pushing the button on the base prior to responding. Alternates, please also state your name if you are attending on behalf of a TPA board representative. And it does seem like we are having a few issues with our microphones. So if you're not seeing the red light come on, please just let us know and we'll bring you a new mic. Steve Wilson. Yvette Drucker.
Here.
Andy Thompson. Angela Cruz. Shelley Petrolia. Joel Flores. Jim Kretzky.
Here.
Ronaldo Diaz. Joni Brinkman.
Here.
Catherine Waldron. Mike, is she? Okay, thank you. Melissa McKinley.
Here.
Maria Marino is absent. Maria Sachs. And just for the record, this is Mac Bernard is here on behalf of Commissioner Sachs. Greg Weiss.
Here.
Shirley Lanier. Fred Pinto.
Jeff Amara here for Fred.
Michael Napoleon.
Here.
Christy Fox.
Here.
Joseph Peduzzi.
Here.
Chelsea Reed.
Here.
Robert Weinroth.
I am here. Thank you very much. Okay, let's all rise. And Mayor Wilson, would you please do the honors of the invocation and the Pledge of Allegiance? Everybody, please rise.
Let us pray. Oh, Heavenly Father, we come to you once again with bowed heads and humble hearts. Thank you, as always, for your grace and your mercy. Realizing, Father, over and over again that through your grace and your mercy, you've been better to us than we've been to ourselves. And with that, we say thank you. Thank you, Father, for knowing us and carrying us through our ups and downs, as well as our failures and disappointments when it comes to our commitment to following you. Help us, Father, to have that faith in you. Show us how to handle doubt and display that faith within you. Oh, Father, we praise you for dispelling the darkness and evils of the world. Continue to open our eyes to you and you only. Father, we know for a fact your power is made visible during the time of our weakness. Continue to give us the strength to carry on. And finally, Father, we ask a special blessing for the chairperson of this meeting. You know his heart. And all of us whom you have allowed to be assembled here today, realizing that we're no strangers to each other, just perhaps friends we have not yet met. We give you all the praises and the glory. Amen. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Thank you, Mayor Wilson, and thank you for those kind remarks. And show for the record, Mayor Flores, I believe, is arrived. Okay. Any modifications to the agenda?
Yes, Mr. Chair. We are requesting the modification of consent item 1H4 and 1H5 for additional appointment renewals and new appointments, respectively. Further, we are requesting the addition of action item 2B for appointment of the second alternate delegate to the Southeast Florida Transportation Council, SEFTEC. An updated agenda is provided to all members.
Okay, I'm looking for a motion to approve the agenda as amended.
So moved. Second.
I have a motion by Councilman Napoleon, second by Councilman Hamara. All in favor, all opposed, show that is approved unanimously.
Mr. Chair, I would just like the record to show that Ronaldo Diaz has joined us in person.
Very good. Thank you for joining us. I'm sure the traffic was the issue for you. Okay. Let's move on to public comments. Again, anybody who has public comments, please fill out a card, and we will certainly be happy to hear from you. Let's see. I think now it's time to do our proclamation. Oh, Mayor Petrolia, it's good to see you. Executive Director, would you like to present and explain what we have before us this morning? We're having some technical difficulties.
Thank you. So we are doing a proclamation for Florida Mobility Week. It starts tomorrow. It's 1 week that the state of Florida is promoting and encouraging, raising awareness of different modes of transportation and trying to encourage folks to try different modes of transportation. So you can find more information. Also, Love to Ride Florida Challenge, a bicycle challenge, is going to kick off tomorrow as well. That will last through November. We encourage everyone to participate. I know there's been some competition before with some of our municipalities as well. So anyone's welcome to participate, whether you're an individual, a business, or a municipality. Please participate. And this is a proclamation to kick off that initiative and Mobility Week. The TPA will be doing a ride this weekend here in downtown West Palm Beach that will end at Safety Fair as well. So we encourage you to participate.
Very good. All right. Well, we're going to do one of our famous photographs. And so I'm going to ask everybody to come on, join me in the middle here, and we can do our photo. Let the record show that Councilmember Mayette has joined us in place of Mr. Thompson. All right. Hello. How we doing?
I sold you.
All right, I got a red light on here. We can be heard. All right. So anyway, I'm not going to read the proclamation. We have all gone through these before, but I think it's significant that October 21st to 28th is Mobility Week. And on a beautiful day like this, on such a, oh, You don't like this here? On a beautiful day like this, a nice crisp morning, it certainly is a nice day to walk to work, walk to the train station. And we certainly, those of us who had to drive from South County, know what it's like to be on I-95. Ah, yes. All right. All right. So now we're going to move on to the serious business that we're here for. First, I'm going to do my comments, and then we'll have comments from the board. At our last meeting at the Board of County Commissioners, Vice Mayor Weiss had brought up an issue that we decided that we would bring to this body. As you probably all know, there was a terrible accident recently on the tracks over here. A freight train hit a passenger vehicle. In fact, the funeral is going to be this afternoon for the woman who was struck. It was a terrible accident. Vice Mayor Weiss, do you want to talk a little bit about the issue that you wanted to bring forward?
Be happy to. Thank you, Mayor. I asked that we, I initially asked that the county take this up, but and with the suggestion of the board, we bring it here, as Mayor has said. And this is, there are a number of intersections downtown where we have three tracks that you have to go across. And what happens during rush hour in the morning and in the evening is traffic can back up and cars get, don't clear the tracks. And in this case, my understanding, the situation was the cars had backed up from Rosemary all the way to Quadrille, and the cars were on the tracks. The arms went down, and the person didn't get out of the way. And it wasn't because they tried to go around the arms. It was they were following the cars in front. And if you realize you've got 200 or 300 feet you've got to clear, as the light goes green, you can't tell whether you're going to make it across. And the concern is obviously to not have anything like this ever happen again. And what can be done, you know, from a safety standpoint, we've adopted our Vision Zero plan. And obviously, they're just, and a suggestion actually came up from Commissioner Kerner after the meeting. One of his thoughts was, is there a way to put a warning signal in advance of the arms going down, you know, 60 seconds prior to the arms going down, that there is a train approaching, so that people know to clear, that they've got to be clear of those tracks. But something, because you just, and I've had it happen where I've had a green light, I'm coming down Banyan, and you're getting ready to go across, and then you see that the arms start to go down. Well, if the person in front of you decides to stop because there is a little space on the east side of the tracks, well, then you get stuck behind them. And then the only thing you can do is either try and go around them or plow through them. You know, I laid on my horn and the car got out of my way. But, you know, people making decisions, or there could be an accident that happens in front of you, or a pedestrian stops out in front of you, and you, things that you have no control over, and it's happening very quickly. And so I wanted to bring it to this body to ask that we bring every good mind, that both in the county, potentially the state and the country, to look at this and say, what are other places doing? Is there something we can do more so that these kinds of situations don't ever occur?
Thank you, Vice Mayor. And again, you know, when it becomes something very personal, as this accident was, of course, it brings it to home. You know, in New York City, we had a thing called no blocking the box. And of course, in New York City, because of all the traffic, if people get stuck in the middle of an intersection, you wind up the traffic going into the intersection from the other side, can't get in, and you wind up the city gets tied up in knots. So it's a hefty fine if you get stuck in the middle of the intersection because you were there and the light turned red. I think one of the answers, and we have the zebra stripes now that have been put in front of the tracks, but I think that there's certainly an argument to be made for putting the zebra stripes through the entire intersection and trying to create PSAs for don't block the box. And as much as it is difficult to stop way back behind the tracks, I think we have to educate our residents that they don't want to be caught like this car was, stuck in the middle of the crossing, not able to move, and find themselves with no place to go as a freight is barreling down on them. I did have some preliminary conversations with our executive director, so she's not surprised by this conversation today. Valerie, can you give us some input into what could possibly be done with this situation?
Sure, and thank you so much for bringing this up and for those comments and ideas. I think those are great suggestions. I will say that we are working very closely with Brightline, with Tri-Rail as well, and with FDOT on education and enforcement efforts. Recently, it was Rail Safety Week, and there was a lot of outreach and enforcement with that. I also will mention that FDOT was just awarded $25 million in a partnership with Brightline. They are also putting in over $20 million for some of the safety improvements and technology improvements that you just mentioned that will be coming and our way. So that's great. They do include do not block the box and other safety improvements to really raise that visibility. I like that idea of the warning signal before the tracks go down as well. So we'll talk more with them, but there is a significant amount of funding coming our way for additional safety improvements. I'll also mention that yesterday we met, we had a meeting with Brightline. They're looking at applying for, they can't apply themselves, so they're looking for a partner potentially with Palm Beach County. We're looking at how we could play a role as well in pursuing a smart grant for safety technology that would be basically trying this new technology with cameras that would capture data, would also let the trains know in advance. So they are exploring all fronts on this, and we're trying to work with them. I mentioned that we're going to have a follow-up call, but they're also going to reach out to probably to Todd about it as well, to talk to the county on how we can partner on this effort in pursuing this grant. So we are aware, we're working as hard as we can to try and see how we can improve these safety efforts.
I just want to add, this was not a Brightline. This was not a Brightline train. This was a freight train, 2 mile long freight train that actually, and in addition to the tragedy that happened, I mean, it shut down downtown for hours.
Yeah.
Hours.
Yes, and the grant that I mentioned Brightline, but it's really FECR and Brightline. So it's the same track that Brightline and the freight trains on the FEC. Those safety improvements would go on there. And actually one of my comments on my director's report, the first one is not only has FDOT received this $25 million plus the $20 million that Brightline is going to be putting on the FEC tracks, working with FECR for the safety improvements, but also Tri-Rail received a $12.9 million grant for safety improvements along the CSX tracks, including 9 crossings in Palm Beach County as part of a CARSI grant. So both train tracks in our downtown, in our county, are working very diligently pursuing these grant opportunities and pursuing safety improvements, both for visibility and technology, and trying to address this issue.
So I'm sure if you've ever driven behind a school bus that's approaching a railroad crossing, you know that they stop. They open the door, they look out, they make sure there's nothing coming. And, you know, I'm sure we're not going to get to a point where people are going to stop their car and, you know, open their windows and look out to make sure there's nothing coming. But on the other hand, we need to be more cautious. Clinton, I see you're sitting in the audience here. What kind of instruction do you give the Palmtran drivers with respect to the intersections?
Mr. Chair, members, Clinton Forbes, Executive Director of Palmtran. Just as you stated for those other transporters, we require the same. It is a standard in the state and around the country for public transit buses to actually stop, and not a rolling stop, a complete stop at every railroad crossing. And, you know, along that corridor, based on how the intersection, they actually are stopping twice for the two tracks before they traverse across the intersection. So we take great caution with that.
Thank you for that input. Commissioner McKinley? Oh, I'm sorry. It's Mayor Petrolia. I'm not seeing the signs.
No, right. No problem. Just very briefly, I think I brought this up last meeting or maybe the meeting before. We had a group of dignitaries in our town from other areas of the country who were shocked at how easy it was to get tangled up with trains down in our area. And I don't know that we need to reinvent the wheel, but for some reason there must be something going on elsewhere that seems to work a lot better than what's happening here. I think Commissioner Weiss said it best. Let's look into some other areas that basically have done something that makes a difference, because I think we're trying to do something to stop it by educating. I don't know that we're going to hit it. I think it's going to have to be something to be done around the tracks that keep this from happening. That's just my
right. And I know that your city had another fatality there, an unfortunate situation where a couple was crossing the tracks and one didn't make it across. Mr. Peduzzi, by the way, happy birthday, young man.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor, and to the Vice Mayor for bringing up this very important issue. We seem to have a particular problem with this downtown, I think just because of the very nature of the traffic congestion and the density of population. I don't know that many of you know that I spent 20 years as a volunteer fire chief, a reserve police officer, EMT in the village of North Palm Beach. And we had train tracks and we had train incidents, not like we see in West Palm. But I think that it's important to keep that component of educating the public in. And I think that I'm going to analogize this situation to preventing house fires. You know, we talk a lot about prevention of house fires, but we don't just talk about prevention of house fires. We talk about what to do in the event that your house catches fire. And we say you have to have an evacuation plan. You have to talk about what you would do in the event of a fire in your home. We don't talk about what to do if you find yourself in the middle of these tracks with gates on either side of you, what to do. And it's not always so simple, but we have to educate people that you must get off the tracks. It doesn't matter how you get off the tracks. If you have to leave your vehicle, leave your vehicle. It's not ideal because you're still putting the people in the train at risk. But if it means knocking that gate down, knock the gate down. If it means riding up on the grass and tearing up the grass, scraping the curb, you get off the tracks. And I think that that's really important because every kid understands stop, drop, and roll. Every kid understands when your fire detector goes off in your house of running out and meeting at the mailbox. We don't talk about this when it comes to trains and train safety. We have to educate people and not just say, don't ever stop on the tracks, because that's important too. But we also have to go a step further and say, if you do find yourself on those tracks, you must get off. It doesn't matter how you get off. I won't go as far as saying pushing the car in front of you off, that, you know, but you got to do what you have to do because you're going to die and the people in your car are going to die unless you get off those tracks.
You make a very valid point. Mayor Koretsky.
I appreciate the way the situation was described by Commissioner Weiss, because it's clear that there's no one single or no two or three solutions that's going to solve it. It's everything. So just one thing that come to mind, you know, I spent time at bridge openings and, you know, they're the timing of the arms and whatever, I think somewhat are programmed to try to avoid someone getting stuck. So it seems to me the first immediate thing that should already be done is increase the duration time of the warning sign that exists. And when the arms go down, that's an easy thing. Everyone, it is programmed now. I don't know what the standard is, but you know, increase it. That would increase the potential for clearing.
I think in this particular situation with a freight moving slower than the bright line, that probably the timing was sufficient as much as you can, you know. And again, I don't want to second guess, and I think the ideas are being put forward. Obviously, you know what you're saying, Commissioner, is appropriate. We need to figure out a way of telling people, if you're in that situation, you need to get out of it, whether it's breakaway arms on the second gate that came down so you could push it out of the way and get off those tracks, or find some place where if there's two tracks to move back out of the way, whatever, you know, when you're in that situation, you're not thinking straight. And so to help people have that, in their mind, what do I do if this happens to me? Councilman Hamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So following up on what Commissioner Bertuzzi said, and the tragedy is a tragedy beyond description, beyond imagine. When it actually happens to a person who's extremely well known in the community, it gets a lot of attention. That may be the only bright spot that I certainly could come up with. But now is definitely the time for that kind of education, because that's what it takes. I know my wife and I had the conversation that you're talking about. What do you do? And so advising people can make a huge difference. So thank you for that.
Ms. Drucker.
Okay. Thank you. It's a question, it's more for Executive Director. Does Brightline have a plan of how they're going to utilize that money, like specific improvements, as we get ready to go all aboard in Boca Raton soon with the Brightline? Obviously, it weighs on my mind and our community. Any loss is a loss, but we're educating. I go all around, and it always amazes me. So 2 days ago, I was in the downtown. The car in front of me, they stopped at the track, but sometimes there's like a track, and then that other little piece before you hit the light. So they kind of just, it tells you right there, you need to stop at this light. When there's a red light, you stop here, not there. They went right over the two tracks, and then half of the car was on the tracks. And I was just sitting there going, this is what we're going to deal with. Like, people just, they don't get it. So I'm curious as to how are they going to fund in terms of the PSA? And I can always go back to city staff and ask, but it's important as we get ready, because, you know, we're opening soon, and I just want to know what they're going to do in terms of education, because I think that's important. I think people don't understand how fast that train goes, or the freight train that runs on there, and they just don't know.
Sure, and Wick, I can follow up with both Tri-Rail and Brightline on what their plans are in a little more depth and share with the board. We can also have them come present at the next meeting a little bit more, because they're both tracks are receiving a lot of money for grants and safety, both infrastructure, technology, and education. So I'll follow up with that information, but we can also request that they come and provide an informational presentation on that for more information and share some of the ideas that have been brought up today.
You know, like Councilman Hamara just said, if those of you who remember back for Betty Ford when she was first lady, when she had breast cancer, that really brought it to the fore. And all of a sudden it became a conversation. My pink ribbon on today, you know, October is breast cancer awareness. I think we need to use this as a teaching moment. And like we said, it's a person that we knew. It's a person that had a lot of the community is really feeling very bad that this happened. And we need to capitalize on that and use this tragedy as a teaching moment. And I think that hopefully we can come up with some ideas. I know when we get to item 3A, Kim Delaney is going to be talking about the issue of not having horns, but that's part and parcel with a warning system that we've made the decision to dispense with. But if we're not going to have horns, then we need to be more cautious around those tracks. And so I think that's going to be part of the conversation we have a little bit later. Ms. Fox, Commissioner Fox.
Thank you, Mrs.
You got your red light.
Thank you. So Commissioner Peduzzi and I, we had a commission meeting on Monday night. We also discussed this, and we have a budget for a Vision Zero coordinator, so that is going to be a top priority when that person comes to office. But I live on Fern Street, just a few blocks from this where this accident happened, and I walk, you know, by it daily. And I think there's a few issues at that intersection and on Clematis as well that are not the same, you know, throughout the county. But there's so much new pedestrian traffic in the new buildings, 360 Rosemary. So at rush hour, there's a four-way stop right in front of Publix. And if you are in a car going on Fern Street going west, there's just so many pedestrians now at 5:30 that are crossing that the traffic backs all the way up past Quadrille to Fern. And so a lot of people are getting stuck on the tracks. If you're going the other way, if you're going east, you might think you're, when you get a green light, you're in a flow of traffic. But if a car in front of you is turning right or left on Quadril and there's a pedestrian there, then you have five cars that are, you know, stuck on the tracks and thinking they're in the flow of traffic. Obviously they're not meaning to be on the tracks, but so it is something we need to look at. I talked to Wen Deng, who was one of our engineers in the city, and she was giving us a few ideas. For example, that in some areas of downtown, we have no turn on red. And so in a situation like this, one of the things that cars also do is, because there is that small spot big enough for one car that's between the tracks and the light, everyone inches their way up to try to turn right on red. So, you know, that's just one example. She was saying, like, we have to, there's going to be a lot of things that have to be part of the solution. But she also mentioned that in some areas in the county, there's pedestrians get a few extra seconds to cross the street before cars can go. If that was the case, if cars and pedestrians were not competing for the light, then when you're in the flow of traffic and you didn't have to worry about the pedestrians, that might help the flow of traffic. So I just wanted to let this body know that the city is also, you know, looking at what the options are. I think there's going to be a multi-pronged solution that has to take a lot of these different stakeholders, but, you know, it's obviously a priority for us as well.
Thank you, Commissioner. And obviously all of our urban cities, whether it's West Palm Beach, Boca Raton, Lake Worth, up and down the corridor, is going to be looking at this extra diligently. Commissioner Diaz.
This incident really highlights how this can happen to anyone. And we all see the comments, and I know we all see the comments, social media, whatever it may be. Whenever an incident happens, there's always too many people who say, you know, oh, how could this possibly happen? This is their fault. And, you know, that notion. So any type of outreach and education is always critical and needed. But I did have a question in terms of, and I don't know who would have the answer to this, but in terms of collecting data and understanding, you know, problem areas for planning and whatnot, is anybody collecting data on the near misses? Like, we know when collisions happen, but the ones that are close calls, because specifically, literally last week in the south end of our town, we have a slight curve, and I saw a very harrowing near miss where it was a really large SUV, and the arm had dropped on the roof of the SUV, and I think that person probably just froze. They just didn't know what to do. And it was a big car, so it was basically like the quarter panel was in the path of the bright line. And as I was coming around the corner, I could hear the horns going, and kudos to that operator that day, because somehow he stopped that train, and it was probably within 15, 10 feet of that car. And he was able, like, so much so that he opened his window and, you know, was kind of flagging the driver down. And finally, that driver backed out of the gates. But, you know, I'm curious if an incident like that, does that get recorded if the train has to come to a full stop, or even if it's feet away? You know, do we know how often that happens?
I know, I believe that both tracks, they are tracking that, a lot of information, a lot of data, which has led to where exactly they want to implement safety infrastructure improvements and where these issues are. There's a lot of data and analysis that they've been doing. But we can follow up on that particular, you know, where are the near misses? Are you tracking that? I know they have cameras and they're tracking this type of information, but they are analyzing it. They are really looking into it. So, but we can confirm, and if we can get them to come provide an informational presentation, we can have them talk about that as well.
Yeah, that would be great, because I think you know, just like in environmental science, you know, sometimes those zeros count as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we shouldn't be reactionary and wait for something to happen to make improvements. So I think that information would be helpful.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner McKinley, see, I was looking in the future. I saw your sign up, but it was just in the future.
It's okay. You know, Mayor Petrulli and I were twin sisters from a previous life. Although she's got better hair. focus a lot on the conversation about the train tracks in the urban core, and I know that there are tracks, you know, up and down the B line as well. But there's also, I want to focus on where there's heavy pedestrian traffic. And so that brings to light, there are also train tracks out in the Glades area that have heavy pedestrian traffic crossing those roads. Both the U.S. Sugar Trail line, rail line, and also the CSX tracks out there. So when we're doing these studies and we're looking at where pedestrians and cars can get stuck on tracks, please make sure we include looking at the tracks in the Glades as well.
Thank you, Commissioner. All right. Well, Vice Mayor, obviously you touched the nerve with that request, and I think we need to look at some solutions. And again, like Commissioner Peduzzi said, not just to stop people from putting themselves in harm's way, but what do you do when you are there and how do you get out of that situation? And like you said, it's not the perfect situation with getting out of the damn car and just, you know, leaving it there to, you know, and worrying about yourself and your occupants in the car. That's the most important thing. All right, let's get on to some less tragic news. Board governance. We, as you know, as an executive committee are meeting on a regular basis. A couple things that we did discuss at our last meeting, and one of them is going to come in front of you, is that timesheets for the executive director are being approved by me on a regular basis. We're going to put those on consent just so that this body has an opportunity to opine if you feel that there's something on there that you would like to address. Also, I'm approving all the expenses for anybody's travel here. So if you are going to a transit-related travel that's being approved and being reimbursed by the TPA, I get to be the one that approves it. However, I don't have anybody approving my expenses except me. So it'll become a consent item if I'm traveling. And so that item will be on the next agenda. And if anybody has a problem with me flying first class, they can then bring it up. That being said, I think that's all I have for the executive director's, for the chair's report. Anybody else have anything? Mayor Koretsky.
Just on that topic, if I understood, you said that the timesheets were going to continue to be on consent?
Just for clarification, I approved staff timesheets. My timesheets are approved by the chair. They are on this agenda on the consent, but we're going to revert back to our previous system, which is every 2 weeks my timesheet is sent to the chair and he approves that. And that's a system that's been used in the past. They're available for anyone to see, though.
So they're no longer going to be on here, which I prefer that approach.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. I thank you for the clarification. Anybody else have any? Councilman Hamara.
Thank you. You're not going to invite me back to the table again. I feel it. But the thing I want to bring up with everybody is, as you know, the Florida League of Cities gets involved in establishing policy, legislative policy and priorities and that kind of thing every year. And so we've met twice now with each one of our five committees, and I'm chairing the Transportation and Intergovernmental Relations Committee. And our recurring theme, of course, is transportation funding. And it continues to be a challenge, especially as we get more and more efficient vehicles and EV and that type of thing. But there are many other related items which we are discussing right now, and hopefully we'll come up with something that's perhaps a little bit more specific than we have in the past when we put our policy statement together. But if anybody has any thoughts or ideas as to anything that Florida League of Cities might put in front of our legislators and especially in front of the leadership up there, please let me know. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. All right. I think we have beaten those issues to death. Now it's the executive director's opportunity.
Great. Well, thank you. I think we've touched on a couple items that I had on here. I mentioned that recently Tri-Rail was awarded a grant for $12.9 million for safety across their tracks here in South Florida, and including 9 crossings in Palm Beach County. Thank you to everyone who participated in National Walk and Route roll to school day. The TPA joined the school district at Everglades Elementary School, and Commissioner McKinley's office was there as well. And we had actually on the printed version here, we have 48, but after we printed this, we found out there was actually 67 local schools who participated, and that was the highest of any county in Florida and to our knowledge nationally. So great participation here in Palm Beach County. More information at that website if you want to see who participated. Also, tomorrow here in at the TPA, we are hosting a post downtown intermodal workshop. We held one at the end of August to bring all the partners together in downtown West Palm Beach to talk about both safety, economic development, congestion, all these different issues that are here in downtown, to identify what those issues are and connect partners together to work on solutions and next steps. So this next meeting tomorrow afternoon, I encourage, if you're interested, to please attend. It'll be talking about what we heard and confirming next steps and what those issues are and proposing solutions. So that's happening tomorrow at 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. here at the TPA. I mentioned Mobility Week. Definitely encourage you to attend. The link here to participate in our ride is here in the director's report, and the Love to Ride Challenge running through the end of November. It hasn't happened yet, but I do want to congratulate the city of Boca Raton and Councilmember Drucker, who really pushed for this. City of Boca Raton is going to be passing their Vision Zero resolution and working on next steps for an action plan next week on Tuesday. This will be the 11th local municipality to do so. So congratulations, really excited for that. Also, really exciting news. The county is doing a groundbreaking on October 28th for the first ever separated bike lane in Palm Beach County. This will be on Lines Road from Southern to Forest Hill Boulevard. And this was a project that the TPA helped fund, prioritized $4.35 million for this project through our local initiatives grant. So very exciting to join that. And we'll be hearing one of our action items is our TPA grants for this, our annual grant program. So we are having a workshop of November 3rd. I encourage all of your staff to attend. There's more money available. We'll be hearing more about that later in the agenda. Also, World Day of Remembrance for Road Traffic Victims is on November 21st. I wanted to bring it up now because we won't have a November meeting. We are talking with the city of Boca Raton on potentially having an event with them for that. And if you didn't see it, we sent out an email earlier this week for mobile tours that the TPA is hosting. We're hosting four mobile tours throughout this fiscal year. It was one of our strategic plan items, but really we want to encourage especially our board members to experience the transportation system that we're planning for here in Palm Beach County. So our next tour is going to be on November 18th at the Port of Palm Beach, but we're also planning a tour with Brightline, the new Boca station at the end of January, as well as with Palmtran and Trirail, and then one with the airport. So that'll be happening between now and the end of this fiscal year, now in May, June. So please register if you're interested in experiencing firsthand and learning more about our transportation providers and systems here in Palm Beach County. We had scheduled a peer exchange to happen in previously, but it actually ended up happening right on the week of the storm. So that is being rescheduled to the spring. And just wanted to mention there's several transportation conferences coming up. We encourage board members to attend Railvolution, a national conference that happens to be happening here in South Florida. Our region's hosting it is happening at the end of this month through November 2nd. On November 2nd, there's a regional day where both Clinton will be speaking on a panel. I'll be speaking on a panel. Our mayor, county mayor, and chair Weinroth will be speaking on a panel, and it'll be the afternoon of the 2nd in Miami. All the transportation leaders across the region will be talking about transportation in our region from Palm Beach County to Miami. So if you're interested, please let me know. The Urban Land Institute is having a summit in Miami, a Florida summit, but on the first day, December 5th, they're doing a density workshop. And it's specifically targeted at elected officials in our region and the public sector. So talking about how do we work around increasing density, but also making it work for transportation. And so we really encourage you to attend. It's on December 5th from 2 to 4 p.m. in downtown Miami. You can take Brightline or Tri-Rail if you'd like. And there will be also another one in January 18th in Broward County. And we're trying to get one to come up here to Palm Beach County, hopefully hosted in our offices sometime next year. But that's TBD for now. There's these opportunities I encourage you to attend and save the date for our 2023 Regional Safe Street Summit, February 2nd and 3rd in Hollywood. Last but not least, well, first, happy birthday, dear Commissioner Peduzzi. But last but not least, it's with a heavy heart, but we want to wish Commissioner McKinley all the best. This is her last meeting. She's been on the TPA board for almost 8 years, since February 2015. I actually started with the TPA in January 2015, so kind of been on the on the same journey here, but we appreciate all of your time and service here helping us at the TPA. So thank you.
Well, certainly we're going to miss Commissioner McKinley on the dais over in the other side of the street here, and we're certainly, you know, we've appreciated your input and your support for a lot of the transportation issues. I know this is not the top of the issues that have been important to you, and certainly we thank you for your service.
Mr. Chair, you know, this board is very similar to the one I serve on with the 16 county coalition on Lake Okeechobee, where you've got Palm Beach County and Hendry County and Glaze County that surround Lake Okeechobee, communities that are often at odds on how that water is dispersed in Lee County and Martin County, and yet we all sit at the table and we come up with compromise positions, compromises, and are able to really move the needle. It's very similar in this room. I know my colleagues from the city of West Palm Beach and sometimes the city of Palm Beach Gardens, we butt heads sometimes in what we support and what we don't support. And I have the utmost respect for everybody's service and the way that they represent their constituents on this board and the way that we're all able to agree and work through things. But I also want to thank the staff. You do a tremendous job. Valerie, it's wonderful to be leaving this board and to see you sitting in the leadership role that you're in. I love looking around the table and seeing more women now than were on this board when I first came on in 2015. So, Mr. Chair, watch out. But the guy who is sitting behind me over my shoulder right now, my partner in all things advocacy related to the Western communities, we fight fiercely for that community. And it's been an honor to serve alongside him on so many of the projects. I think I just highlighted the lights on State Road 80 and the battle that it took and all of the effort that everybody in this room, when we go to Tallahassee and we ask for those extra dollars, when we go to Washington and we fight, I'm still fighting on the farm to market road thing, but Senator Scott's office is represented in the audience by Ryan. And so I won't give up even when I'm not paid to do it. I won't give up trying to get that language into federal legislation, but this is a tremendous team. We all do this together. It's been an honor to serve with each and every one of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mayor?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's an old saying that men don't cry. But I would tell you, when you have people who serve from their heart, like our commissioner, you do get emotional about it. It would be appropriate if we pause for a minute and I'll say to her, and I don't own the rights to this song, but if you allow me, Mr. Chair, I'd like to sing 30 seconds of this song to our colleagues. I've been with her for the last 8 years on this board. She don't only just bring the problems or the complaints to this board, she also brings the solution. I want to say thank you on behalf of this board. But the song goes a little like this. You are so beautiful to me. Can't you see what your life has done for me? You're everything we hope for, and you're everything that we need. That is why we say to you, you are so beautiful to me.
Thank you, Mayor. Commissioner Diaz, did you want to?
That's going to be hard to follow because I was going to comment on something completely different. Thank you, Commissioner McKinley. Something I wanted to talk about, the walk and roll to school day was hugely successful in Lake Worth, as is every school day, because so many of our kids walk to school because it's a very, low income neighborhood. And something recently came to our attention. Well, I would say we've known about it, and recently there's been a strong community support to address this situation. And that is how one of our schools is on one side of I-95 near 10th Avenue, and the majority of the students live east of I-95 in town. And so those kids who are walking home have to cross over 10th Avenue. And we know the Divergent Diamond is coming soon. I think that would be helpful, but so much more needs to be done. And I think what I'm doing is basically asking for TPA help and support for a couple things. In the interim, we would love to have crossing guards or PBSO to supply crossing guards along those many points of crossing on 10th Avenue. We were told that they don't want to do that because the painful irony is they don't necessarily want to do that because they say it's too dangerous for the crossing guards to stand there. Well, the kids are going to cross that street regardless. So we would like, help on getting crossing guards there. And I think, we're talking about other long-term solutions. One thing that I've brought up is a pedestrian crossing bridge would be ideal, leaving from that school over to like 13th North or one of those streets that comes close. But would love, some help in addressing that issue and coming up with a solid plan to keep our kids safe.
Thank you for bringing that to our attention and for those comments. Unfortunately, we can't fund that's crossing guards or have any control over that. However, we do work closely with the school district, and we also offer to all our municipalities to do walking audits, and we can bring the partners together and really draw attention to that. So we'd be happy to follow up and schedule a walking audit. Our hope is out of those walking audits that we can identify with the municipalities a project to implement and for the municipality to apply for a grant, one of our grant programs. And also, I want to mention that there is a statute for school hazardous walking conditions to kind of identify what determines the school hazardous walking conditions. We've done an analysis across all 107 schools to try to find opportunities for grant and to reach out to our municipality to say, hey, would you like to apply for this? We can't make anyone do anything, but we want to, connect the dots. So that's something that we're going to be reaching out soon and working with the school district to try to identify, because what we want is ultimately we have grant programs for infrastructure, right? So we want our municipalities and our partners to apply to fix crosswalks, to fix sidewalks, to connect those dots. In Lake Worth Beach, we have a great success story a few years ago through one of those grants was a shared use path to connect to one of the schools through an area that was just unused, owned by the city. So those are the wins that we're looking for.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think we're asking for funding first, but yeah, help in, our PBSO, our captain, I believe he wants to put crossing guards there. He needs to convince his higher ups. And, if we can have the support to help him convince the higher ups and pursue those other things, yeah, I'll follow up with you for that. That'd be great. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. And certainly hearing that it's too dangerous for crossing guards is something that is very disturbing. Commissioner McKinley.
Commissioner Diaz, I lived for a little bit of time in the 300 block of Palmway. My daughter went to North grade, and there's so many of the families, their kids walk to school. But that problem has been a problem for a while, and I highlighted that problem also when my kids went to Forest Hill High School, and they're trying to cross Forest Hill Boulevard in the morning coming from all directions. The constant reply I got is the school board doesn't provide for crossing guards beyond the elementary school level. And so I'm looking around the room, and it just after 8 years became apparent that the school board is one of the largest transportation providers in this county, yet they don't have a seat on the TPA. That should be something that we look at. But also, if that restriction on crossing guards beyond elementary school is something that's in state statute, we ought to develop a criteria for special circumstances in statute and change that rule so that we can provide the funding for it. I agree with you. That condition over 10th Avenue is dangerous.
Yeah, that's certainly a valid point, Commissioner. I think we should study. I mean, we do have an opportunity to add on seats if we did feel that there was a necessity, and school board certainly seems to be someone that should be at the table. Vice Chair? You may.
No, you can't.
We're sharing this today. Just a nice story for you, Commissioner Diaz. We did a walking audit with the TPA, which has we did do that walking audit with the TPA a few years back, and we have since applied for a transportation alternatives grant on that corridor. And we are in the process. We're going to begin this summer, and we'll be done by fall in time for school, putting in a total of 12 pedestrian crossings that will make that area safer all the way up and down Holly. So that gives you an example of the walking study working with the TPA, applying for the Transportation Alternatives Grant, and having it all go in. We've done that within the span of about 3 years. So it can work, but you just have to maybe have your staff come to the November 3rd meeting to get on board about the grant application process.
Very good. All right. I think we are done with our conversation. I think it was very fruitful, frankly. You know, this is an opportunity for all of us to have these kind of conversations at one table where we have the opportunity in the sunshine to, have discussions about transportation. So I don't think it was lost on the fact that, you know, it's been about 40 minutes that we had this conversation. It's now time to deal with the consent agenda, as was noted before. We've added on a number of appointments on here that we're asking the board to ratify. And of course, as the executive director said, this time and this time only, her timesheets are on here. So I'm going to look for a motion to approve. I have a motion by Mayor Flores. Do I have a second? I have a second by Councilman Napoleon. Seeing no further discussion, all in favor, all opposed, show that is approved unanimously. Thank you. Okay, and as I always promise, we'll have the action items done by 11 o'clock, so if anybody has other places they need to be. We do have the next item, which is a presentation on the Local Initiatives, Transportation Alternatives, and State Modification Program Guidelines and Scoring System. I'm going to invite Jason to come on up and do his thing.
Good morning, everyone. So today I'm going to go over the funding program guidelines and scorings for our three grant programs that we offer here. This is an exciting time because this is an action item, and we're going to formally adopt these programs, and then we're going to roll them out after the formal adoption to them. So the three programs we offer here, there's state road modifications designed for state road improvements, local initiatives designed for the federal aid highway network, and then transportation alternatives, that's for local roads and the federal aid eligible roadway network. So those are the three programs I'm going to go over today. And you can find more information here at our website, palmbeachtpa.org/funding, and I'll review that at the end. So some key dates for all of these programs. The first is the formal kickoff of the program by taking action today and approving this action item. We'll formally kick off the programs. Following that, we'll have our November 3rd application workshop. We'll provide all of the details about how to apply and what we're looking for projects. And it'll be here, it'll be recorded live, and then we'll post it on our website for future reference. And we encourage any potential applicants to attend either in person or virtually. Following that, we'll do our pre-application meeting. That's required for all potential applicants. That'll run for about 3 months from November to January 3rd, where we'll schedule one-on-ones with each applicant. And then our application deadline is February 17th, 2023. Following that, we'll work with FDOT and the TPA and the applicant to figure out which projects are deemed eligible for funding. And then we'll bring all of those projects that are eligible for funding back on our list of priority projects later on in 2023 in July. So the most exciting news for these programs is there's new additional funding. So we're looking at more money to dedicate to these programs, which are offered to all of our municipalities. And so that's probably the best news we've seen in all of the years for these particular programs. And one of those, so with the new funding, we're allocating that funding or putting it towards transportation alternatives and local initiatives programs. And the local initiatives program is getting a little more of a boost because through the federal transportation bill, there's the bipartisan infrastructure law that's has a new program called carbon reduction program funding. We're taking that funding and we're applying it to our local initiatives program. And here on the bottom, you see a breakdown of the additional funding that we're receiving each year, starting in 2023, all the way up to 2028. And so to give you a little more detail on where that funding is being applied specific to the program, first, there's the state road modification program. We're keeping that the same. And we're allocating the funding that the additional funding for local initiatives and transportation alternatives. And for local initiatives, you see last year we're getting about $20 million, and we're increasing that to $26 million for the additional funding for local initiatives in general, and then the carbon reduction strategy program. Next is our transportation alternatives program. That increase from $3 million to $5 million. And then we're requesting an increase in the maximum funding for that particular program because we see that there's some increased costs when you're trying to implement projects on local roadways. And transportation alternatives program is the opportunity to provide better infrastructure, bicycle and pedestrian infrastructure, or just safety projects in general on your local roadway. So it's great to see more money dedicated to local roadways, and then increasing the maximum to $1.5 million helps out a lot. So you can find, you know, you can cover all of the costs to make these safety improvements. And so with that, there's increased funding for all of these programs. We're encouraging everybody to apply. In addition to the increased funding, there's the scoring program that's also being adopted today. And with the scoring programs, we're using the same scoring that we used last year. This is an objective scoring system that we run all of the applications through. So there's the state road modifications, there's local initiatives, and there's also transportation alternatives. And each one of these scoring systems are designed specifically for the metrics for that particular program. And they're representative of our long-range transportation plan goals and objectives. So we look at our long-range transportation plan and design these objective scoring metrics based on that. And that's what you see here. And there's no changes from last year. It worked very well last year. We got a lot of great projects, and we're looking forward to doing the same this year. And we encourage all of you to work with your staff to apply, because there's more funding available. And this is, you know, by adopting this today, you're opening up to all municipalities to apply for these types of grants. And this is the way you change your communities and make things safer locally, either on a state road, a local road, or a county road. All of these programs have something for you for your municipality. So with that, I just want to remind you that our grant application workshop is November 3rd from 2 to 4:30. It'll be here in our offices. You can come in person, attend virtually, or view it afterwards when we post it on our website. And lastly, the most important part is the application deadline is February 17th, 2023. And as always, on our website, palmbeachtpa.org/funding, we are getting a new website. So in the coming weeks or months, you'll see a new website where you'll be able to navigate and get this additional information about our funding programs, or reach out to any of us at the TPA, and we'll be happy to answer any questions. And with that, I'm requesting a motion to approve the funding programs and scoring guidelines for these programs.
Thank you, Jason. Just a question. Public transportation, where does that fit in with all of these revenue streams? You know, PalmTran, TriRail, those kind of good things.
They're very successful at applying for grants. We, in the past few years, SFRTA or TriRail has applied for new rolling stock, and they've received that over the last couple of years. So they've purchased new trains. And then PalmTran PalmTran has a electric bus initiative where they're converting a lot of their buses to electric buses, and they've been very successful as well as applying each year, receiving up to 3 to 4 buses each funding cycle, as well as improving their bus stops. They've applied for transportation alternatives and local initiatives to improve a lot of their bus stops countywide. And so both of those agencies have benefited significantly from the programs.
Very good. Okay. Ms. Brinkman, Mayor Brinkman, Pro Tem.
Yes, I just had a question because I know Valerie and I spoke about this yesterday too. The carbon reduction program now being incorporated into the local initiatives. Yeah. I heard you say we're not changing any of the point systems. Is there something in there already that accounts for, can you maybe describe that a little bit?
Yes. So I don't have the presentation up, but if you look at our program overview for local initiatives in our scoring metrics, there's specific ones for including an infrastructure or projects or components of a project that address environmental, you know, that, let's see. But it is definitely here. Yep, under why there is projects that have positive environmental impacts for either mitigation activities, pollution prevention, abatement, stormwater management. So sometimes we see you're improving a roadway, you have to reconstruct it, you're building a bike lane, or you're expanding the sidewalk, and there might be swales for runoff. And so sometimes we see bioswales and those type of infrastructure being incorporated into the overall project. So there are, or there's landscaping where there's additional landscaping to maybe replace concrete with something more pervious to absorb more water.
Okay, so the pollution part that will
yes,
capture
so
that.
That's a okay. specific one. So yeah, we incorporate that, and that's part of our long range transportation plan objectives as well.
Thank you. Vice Weiss.
Thank you, Jason. Couple questions. Is there in your scoring, is there a benefit for people that include a dig once provision where they're working with other potential utility companies so that, you know, that they actually have a partner, they put a partnership in place. So when they open up, if they're opening up a roadway, that they're burying infrastructure in there or putting conduit in there. And do we give them a benefit for doing such?
It's not specific in the scoring metrics for receiving points for collaborating with utility companies, but we do advocate for that because a lot of the times when you're improving the sidewalks, there's usually utilities in the sidewalk or in the right of way. And so as part of these projects, we definitely advocate for moving that stuff to have a clear sidewalk of 5 feet or greater. And oftentimes there's a utility pole in the middle of that. So we encourage it, but it's not something that we require because it takes the collaboration of the municipality and the utility company to agree to kind of fund that part. And I believe it might be a non-participating. It might not be something that we cover under the grant specifically. We may cover everything around that part, but not specifically the movement of the utility or burying it, like you're mentioning.
One of the issues that, you know, that comes up in my work with the National Association of Counties, and we've seen it here as well, that unfortunately we you know, as these projects get implemented and the information is shared with the utility companies or so on, it's not part of their program, so they're not participating at that time. And then they come back later and say, okay, we now, you know, we need conduit or something like that, and it needs to be buried in the infrastructure, and they open it up, and then you see all the cutups and things that go on the roadways. I'm just wondering if somebody's arranged this in advance and has this, I mean, it's an extra benefit for everybody when they do that. Or if in fact, even if the municipality or whoever the agency is that's putting the project in place, if they're willing or as part of their project putting conduit so that in fact the roadway doesn't have to be opened up and this conduit can then be leased back out, you know, if that might be something that somebody gets an advantage for putting that in their project, because in the long run it's going to save everybody money and provide an opportunity for upgrades for some of these necessary improvements. So maybe just something to consider. The other thought was, and I see it's up, you sort of have it in there, is that I think there's a real need to encourage people to try pilot projects implementing new technologies. For example, you can walk up to a traffic light today, and in some areas they have sensors and they know that there's a pedestrian standing there or there is a bicyclist that's requesting service without somebody having to take positive action themselves. And so really improving the use of technology and signalization technology. So all those things I think would be real benefits and should somehow be recognized in the scoring of these projects to help increase our priority.
Thank you.
Okay. I don't see any further discussion on this item. Do we have any comment cards or anybody online?
And if you don't mind, I would also like to make a motion to approve this.
Okay. Okay. So the motion that the Vice Mayor has just made is to approve the 2023 local initiatives, transportation alternatives, and state road modifications guidelines and scoring system. I'm looking for a second. I have a second by the Vice Chair. Any further discussion? Seeing none, I don't need a roll call on this, do I? No. Okay, all in favor? All opposed? Show this is unanimously approved. All right, we're going to move on. Second item is a motion to appoint. We have a situation that both myself and Commissioner Marino are unable to attend the next CEFTEC meeting. We are putting in front of you the motion to appoint a second alternative delegate. And as you see in our information here, we are suggesting that the vice chair would be the second alternate on to the CEFTEC delegate for the Southeast Florida Transportation Council. Any conversation? Any other? Okay, I have a motion to approve from Vice Mayor Cruz. Do I have a second? I have a second by Council Member Drucker. I saw your card go up, Mayor Reed. Did you want to say anything?
We're sharing our mic. I'm stealing his microphone again. Generally speaking, this is a three-person regional committee for the MPOs, and I do think we need to take a look at it as we appoint for the next go-around. Usually, whoever is the chair and the vice chair are the folks that represent for this board, and having two folks that are on county commission together probably makes it a little bit more difficult because you guys have very similar schedules. So when we reappoint, whoever is chair or vice chair, let's also consider making sure that we kind of spread it out between different representatives so we can assure attendance.
All right, point well taken. Valerie, did you want to make any comments before I call the vote on this?
No, thank you. That's true. This is the Southeast Florida Transportation Council is a three-member board with usually the chair of each MPO and the vice chair being the alternate. So thank you, Vice Chair Reed, for serving as the second alternate to make this meeting.
Yeah, and I think the same reason that the chair and the vice chair of this body shouldn't be both either members of the commission or members of municipality. I think it's nice to have a balance, so we should do the same going forward. With that being said, we have a motion to appoint. All in favor? All opposed? Congratulations. Enjoy your trip down to Broward. Okay, that is the end of our action items. So anybody who has schedule conflicts, you can now take a little walk, but you probably want to stay for this next item because we're going to talk about quiet zones. And today we are privileged to have Kim Delaney here from our Treasure Coast Regional Planning Council. Kim, it's always great to see you. Tell us about quiet zones and what we can do to keep people from forgetting that there are tracks there, and when there are tracks there, sometimes trains.
We'll do our best to do that, right? So good morning. For the record, Kim Delaney from Treasure Coast Regional Planning Council, here to provide just a brief update on quiet zones. Quiet zone assistance, of course, the council is providing through its agreement with the Palm Beach TPA. And so just a brief overview for you as to where we are. It's kind of a hot topic and related to the earlier discussion, but really kind of a different issue. So quiet zones, for phase two in Brightline are available to local governments from West Palm at 23rd Street North to Tequesta, the balance of the county that hasn't been improved yet and had quiet zones established. And so those local governments, of course, are listed on the slide: West Palm, Riviera Beach, Lake Park, Palm Beach Gardens, Jupiter, and Tequesta, with locations on the map as to the grade crossings that are being improved. Just for those board members that are new to the subject, very briefly, a little quiet zone, kind of 101, if you will, just to put the vocabulary in place. So quiet zones are available to be established by local governments, which are referred to as the public authorities, for sections of track that are at least a half mile in length. Pardon me, there is federal code that defines the train horn rule. That's in Code of Federal Regulations 222. The railroad cannot establish quiet zones, only public authorities can. And when a quiet zone is established, what it tells the railroad operator is that no longer will train horns be sounded routinely, but if there's an emergency, if there's someone on the track or a vehicle on the tracks, of course the conductor would sound the horn. Or there might be other railroad rules or FRA rules that say the train is going by a certain point where there's construction, for example. And in those locations, the horns will be sounded. And so that's a distinction I like to make, because when I talk to residents, and that's often, there are instances when the horn should be sounded, and we want that to happen. So a quiet zone doesn't mean that it will always be quiet forever. With respect to the quiet zone establishment process, again, that process is set forth in the Code of Federal Regulations. The way it works is the public authority initiates that it wants to establish a quiet zone. It conducts a feasibility assessment with FRA staff. The FRA staff member actually joined me today, Rory Newton, who's in the back. Rory, we are very lucky in the region now to have an FRA staff member who lives in the region and is available to assist local governments all the time, and he does. And so that's new for FRA. It's a benefit for the region. We work very closely with FRA in doing this quiet zone work for local governments. Rory's been in each of your council chambers, for those of you that are along the corridor, working with your staffs one-on-one. Their job is to help do the feasibility assessment initially, conduct what are called diagnostic reviews, and we did those back in January through the corridor. FRA staff also helps the local governments with the documentation that's necessary. The job for public authority is to determine what's called the Quiet Zone Risk Index. In the land of acronyms, there are as many in this part of the law as there are in every other part of the law. So the QZRI is the focus when folks are trying to establish a quiet zones, and that's compared to other national thresholds that speak to safety on the corridor. When those evaluations are done, local governments file what's called a notice of intent, referred to as an NOI. That notice of intent is a formal correspondence that lets all relevant parties know the local government intends to establish a quiet zone. Once that a 60-day comment period is completed and all the construction is done and the corridor is certified, public authorities can take the next step, which is file a notice of establishment. That's called an NOE. Notice of intents can be filed anytime. And so we're working with your local governments now, and they are developing their packages to file notices of intent. And then when all the work is done and the public authority decides it's now the right time, a notice of establishment can be filed to put the quiet zone in place. And so those processes are underway in your local governments. There are continuing obligations for public authorities once a quiet zone is established, and FRA has asked us to be sure that we really emphasize this point. And so once quiet zones are established, FRA has the right to come back and review them at any time, and we certainly have more terrible headlines in the region than other parts of the country. So FRA is doing lots of inspections now, going out to look at quiet zone conditions and understand whether or not additional infrastructure is necessary. There's also a requirement on at least an every 3-year basis, but FRA is suggesting maybe annually, local governments should be going through an affirmation, which is to go out and check conditions, look at safety data, if there's a crash history, understand the crash history, and identify if there's any additional infrastructure that would be appropriate, any additional interventions necessary to discourage people from being in the wrong place on the corridor. The train horn rule is under review now by FRA, so there might be revisions forthcoming, and so we're paying attention to that process, and we'll communicate that back to local governments as we know if there are changes that we need to be responding to. As part of the council's work to the TPA, we are working a lot in the land of interagency coordination. And so this slide has those entities identified that have been together in workshops for local government staff and working together to make the corridor as safe as possible. FEC Railroad, as well as Brightline. The RTA has been a resource agency. Of course, the RTA has quiet zones on the CSX corridor. That's not the focus for this morning, but they have a lot of expertise. FDOT has also remarkably increased its presence and activity in rail safety. And so those staff are also working directly with local governments to address quiet zone issues. With respect to technical training, we have been busy with local governments working in this room and others with quiet zone workshops, conducting diagnostic field reviews. FRA has also been down in the region conducting lunch and learn webinars and different training sessions for safety and trespass mitigation. With respect to schedule, among the calls I get the most often as your staff representative, it is, when is my quiet zone going to be established? And the answer to that is at some point in the future. And this slide illustrates those timeframes. Brightline, of course, is under construction now. And the expectation is that construction will be completed sometime next year, hopefully early next year. And then after the completion of construction, Brightline is going to operate what's called a simulated schedule. And so they're going to test the corridor, and FRA will be present to make sure all the infrastructure works the way it's supposed to, and pay attention to how drivers and pedestrians and others respond to that infrastructure that's in place. And so that simulated schedule is going to be underway for a little while. We don't have a time frame yet. We've asked for that time frame. I mean, as a betting person, I would say at least a few weeks, probably, maybe longer. A simulated schedule will be running, and FRA will be finishing up its certification of the corridor. Local governments, again, can file a notice of intent at any time, and then that kind of sits in the hopper waiting for execution. And so after the simulated schedule is done, and after Brightline, or rather FRA certifies the corridor, Brightline service will begin, FRA monitoring will continue, and then at that point, local governments can file what's called the notice of establishment. So it's going to be a little while. All of the local governments are working as quickly as possible, but there are other factors at play. In that process, there are two sources of staff assistance. The council is available, again, through our agreement with the TPA, to provide briefings in at local governments. For example, we'll be at West Palm briefing the commission Monday morning, working with your staff and helping with documentation. FRA staff is also available for that. And so that assistance will continue going forward. One note to mention, in the world of grant opportunities, and the board talked a bit about grants earlier this morning, FDOT, Brightline, and the FRA are now collectively going to fund about $45 million worth of safety improvements, which is great news for the region. And so that grant's called a RAISE grant. That grant's going to be available to fund things like dynamic envelopes, which is kind of that paint on the ground to indicate where you should not be when the gates are coming down, delineators, raised pavement markings, fencing and landscaping. All of the local governments on the corridor will be receiving some type of improvements. At this point in time, FDOT, as the lead agency, is going through all the paperwork with the feds to secure those dollars. And then they'll be working with each local government individually to make sure that the type of infrastructure that local government wants is the type that's going to be pursued. Fencing and landscaping, for example, a large conversation in all of the local governments, and that is a big part of what the grant will hopefully be funding. And so with that, my contact information and then Rory's contact information is here, and we're happy to answer any questions if you have them.
Thank you, Kim. Let me ask you a question. I mean, obviously, you heard the conversation we had before, and there's real concern, obviously, for the safety of residents, and we started this conversation about quiet zones when Brightline was going to institute service, and we were talking about 20 trains coming through a day, and obviously living in Boca right now, I'm hearing the horns because we're doing the testing because of the new Boca station. So I know what it's now like to have the horn at 5 a.m. as the trains are coming through. But that being said, obviously safety is paramount. And is there a situation where either Brightline or Tri-Rail or FEC is going to say of their own accord, we don't care that you have an NOE. We're going to hit the horn now every time we hit those crossings.
Yeah. So so there's not an easy answer to that, but the answer is I think so. FRA has been highly focused on the Southeast Florida region because we have the most fatalities per length of track of any region in the country. And FRA staff has been clear with that, that different driver and pedestrian behavior is necessary for us to be able to maintain quiet zones in the corridor. And that's a challenge for the region. We have a driving and pedestrian condition that's been conditioned differently. And we're still learning clearly as a region that more trains and more trains moving quickly make for very different conditions. And so we have a challenge as a region collectively to figure out how to behave in a different way. I don't know how to kind of express that more more succinctly. When I'm asked, and I'm asked often, how quickly can we get our quiet zone and how do we protect our quiet zone? I think the answer is to work collectively to help remind people that when the light starts blinking on a gate and it starts to go down, the message to drivers is not speed up because it's now a red light, but the message to drivers is you're supposed to stop because that's now a red light when the light starts to blink or to illuminate on the gate. We have drivers that are conditioned differently, unfortunately. And so we're painfully learning how to behave differently in the transportation network.
I mean, one of the things that had been brought up, I think, by Vice Mayor Weiss was like an early warning system. So rather than the gates going down, if there was some sort of yellow light that started flashing a minute or so before even the gates came down, I'm not saying people wouldn't ignore it or do what they do with an amber light and drive faster so they get through the intersection. But I mean, there's clearly a need for some review. And I remember in Lake Worth Beach, we had the video that was released by Brightline that showed someone that was sitting at a gate. And when the freight passed, figuring that the train had now passed and they had been waiting long enough, they jumped into the intersection only to find that there was a Brightline coming in the other direction and they wound up getting pushed to the side and actually surviving that particular collision. So, you know, I think we all understand that our constituents don't want to hear the trains coming through on the regular basis, but on the other hand, we need to keep them from getting killed. Sure. And so we have a delicate balance here.
And along those lines, FRA has been kind of putting all resources to bear on understanding, are there different infrastructure improvements that would make it better on the corridor? And if so, what are the ones that we can implement? I like the idea of advanced yellow lights. There's a mixed bit of evidence as to whether or not they're effective, but I would concur with you as a driver in the region. That advance warning for me as a driver helps me respond differently to that information. But along those lines, regardless if that's the solution or not, there is a tremendous amount of effort underway to understand what is the additional infrastructure that's appropriate, how do we fund that infrastructure, and how quickly can we get it in the ground. So that works.
And I think, like Commissioner Peduzzi was saying, we need to have both instruction on staying off the tracks and instruction on what to do if you are stuck on the tracks and that train is barreling down on you, like we do with fire drills and everything else, giving them the sense of this is what I need to do. I'm stupid for being here, or I made a mistake, but now I need to get myself out of harm's way. And sure, we need to be addressing that as well.
Sure. And those gates are designed to help get drivers off the track. So of the things that I've learned, and I'm not a railroad engineer, I'm a policy expert analyst. So, but that said, that second gate is designed to fall more slowly than the first gate. So the first gate is supposed to fall. It does. and then allow drivers to clear to get off the track. So the second gate falls later. That's constant warning time, I think, right?
Does that second gate have like a breakaway mechanism on it? Let's say you were stuck in that middle. If you pushed your car against that gate, will it break away and let you out?
They both do, I believe. So, right? Roy, do you want to come up this way? Because it's easier to hear you.
So, good morning. I'm Roy Newton. I'm the Railroad Safety Inspector for the Federal Rail Administration. The direct question about the crossing gate, they are designed to swing 90 degrees and then break off and fall on the ground. There's literally a $1 shear pin built into the gate mechanism, and that's a standard feature in all railroad crossings, including ones here in West Palm Beach.
I guess we need to, again, communicate that to people, that you shouldn't feel that you're caged in there, that there is a way to get out.
Yeah, they're designed that way because it happens actually very frequently. People, or a lot of times it's trucks, will catch the gate and they'll pull through and it just pulls it with it. Instead of ripping everything apart, we replace a $1.25 pin and put the gate back on. It's back in service almost immediately. So,
and I don't think any of us knew of anything about that. So that's certainly something
problem that they fixed about 30 years ago. So, but it does happen very frequently. I'm before the FRA, I was a railroad. I worked at Union Pacific as a road police officer. So broken gates is a very common call for the road repair. It, fortunately, it's an easy fix, though, for them.
And clearly a broken gate is the least of our problems if we're in that kind of a situation. Mayor Koretsky, you are recognized.
Few items. Number one, I'm in phase two. So, you know, unlike everybody to the south, I've seen the changes that have been happening. So I might be more aware of those changes. I'm just saying that as a point of perspective. So, you know, I've heard for at least a decade questions from our residents about quiet zone. I must have answered probably 100 times. And I think every single time I answer, I said, there's no guarantee that it's going to be quiet because you want the rail, you know, the train conductor to blow the horn if needed. So I've tried my darndest to set expectation. Nonetheless, we keep getting asked that question. We're not going to enact it until we're comfortable with the conditions. I say that for Jupiter. But and you touched on this because we've heard that the federal government was looking into Broward and into our area because of the incidence of accidents, fatalities. So I'm interested to tell those inpatient communities in Jupiter, what's the likelihood that that's going to change? Because, you know, I know I'm going to be going before some people in the next month and telling them the date this may happen. And I want
to refer to their quiet zone being terminated or.
Yeah. I mean, what is
it's still under review as far as I'm aware.
What's the schedule on
the way the rule is written? This is actually all in that then Kim's slide, the 222 rule. It has all this criteria written into it that once the associate administrator puts under review, they don't have to give much time to terminate. So we don't want to throw it into that until we're ready to go through that process, get the public comment. And then if there's a termination determined to be necessary, that's what will happen. So they want to make sure everything is all put together before we make that kind of a, that's a pretty drastic tip course in action. So unfortunately, the only tool in the toolbox for the FRA is if a quiet zone, a public authority is not compliant, our only action is to terminate the quiet zone. There's no fines, there's no suspensions. It's either you have it or you don't. So it's important that they maintain the safety of their quiet zone before you go down that road. So we do that, we'll make sure it's still absolutely the last resort. Give a community a chance to correct the problems. And they are working on it. So
okay. Thank you. So just two more items. Number one, when they were doing the modifications, Brightlands was coming through, they put up signs that said trains may not exceed 80 mile an hour. And I immediately questioned, and I know Nick, our previous executive director, had written off because trains in Jupiter are going to be going up to 110 mile an hour at the south end. So I had asked for, can we change the signs that trains may go up to 110 mile an hour? Because I want drivers and pedestrians to be scared of going across the track. So I've not made any headway on changing those signs out to 110. Is that a federal regulation that it can't? There was a standard, Nick?
Yeah.
And why can't we change that? I mean, that seems like that's in interest of safety.
So the signage is governed by the manual for uniform traffic control devices, which is oversaw by the Federal Highways Administration. And that sign, particularly that the trains may exceed 80 miles per hour, is a standardized sign. So you'll see those all over the country in any place where the trains exceed 79 miles per hour, basically for 110 mile per hour service. So that's why that sign is being used, because it's the current standard. I don't know specifically if there's a regular saying you can't put up additional signs saying trains may be approaching 110 miles per hour, but they want to get the minimum so people know it's going to be faster than they are accustomed seeing Amtrak going in most places, which is typically 79 miles per hour.
Well, that's the issue I have, is that, you know, in the first phase of Brightline, it's not going to go above 79. So an 80 mile an hour sign's okay. But if it's approved to come through Jupiter 110, I think the sign should, the criteria should change. We should be allowed to do that. We shouldn't have both signs up. And we just talked about that. You want drivers to be, you know, early. We want drivers to be really, and pedestrians to be afraid to cross the tracks. If we're not telling them the speed, then we're failing to live out Vision Zero.
And Mayor, you know what? We'll raise that again with FDOT, because FDOT has kind of a whole body of improvements it's anticipating on the corridor. And I'm going to raise that specific point with them to see if they can assist us in finding a way for a variance or an exception, or help support additional local signage to make that point.
Thank you. And if you get with me after the meeting, anytime, tell me who I need to talk to, because it's ludicrous not to be. And then just lastly, and I every time the word trespasser is used, I understand why it's used. I find that personally offensive. I represent the people of Jupiter. We have pedestrian crossings that are between large distances between crossings that people have used for decades. We call them human beings. So I've said that every time I see that. I understand why they say that legally. But that's why we're going to have fencing put up in Jupiter before Brightline comes through at 110 mile an hour. I'm just wanting to get that on the record. It is offensive to just suggest that we're just worried about trespassers. We're worried about human beings. Can someone, when related to rail, start using that term? Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Vice Mayor Weiss.
Thank you. Thanks for the presentation. One of the things I think in you know, you talk about, and Dr. Delaney, you mentioned, you know, issues per mile of track or something, but I think for us it has to do with the number of crossings. I mean, there are so many crossings here in our region that other communities don't have. I mean, where you have so many streets that cross over, so maybe we need to be looking at the issues per crossing as opposed to per mile, and to really understand the impact or maybe look at them together to really understand what's happening, and are certain crossings more susceptible. And, you know, in specific, you know, we were talking about the issues of the downtown West Palm area on the FEC tracks, because you have three tracks and you have very close the way the intersections are is very close to where the tracks are, that don't exist in other areas. And maybe those can be looked at, you know, sort of the design of the intersection and to get a better understanding and what safety features could or couldn't be implemented.
Sure, we'll do that. And also, Vice Mayor, there's an enormous amount of grant funding available in the infrastructure bill for local governments to handle safety and preventing individuals from getting into the corridor, mobility, rail crossing safety, rail infrastructure. And so that information is in the hands of your staff and FRA, and we, of course, and the TPA are available to kind of help figure out if there are specific things that should be done, especially in a West Palm that has the phenomenal grid, and with it, the challenge of a phenomenal number of grade crossings. Absolutely.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. Council member?
It's just more of a comment. So I agree with the signage. That was a question that I had on here, so I'm glad you brought that up. Also, we have five, you know, crossings in the future Brightline Boca Raton. So one of the number one questions that I get is, how fast are the trains going? So I think that signage, and I didn't know where I knew I fell with FDOT. So also, just as a commentary, I'm hopeful as we educate and continue to educate and we all, you know, push the PSAs out, the newer vehicles alert you. Like my car is a couple of years old, 2 or 3 years old. It says railroad crossing ahead. My daughter has she just started driving. So she has a newer car and it says railroad track approaching and it tells you in advance. So hopefully, you know, people will start to be educated more and more around that with those technologies. And I like the traffic signal activation. So I'm very hopeful that as we continue to educate that, you know, will help protect the lives of humans. So.
Thank you. And clearly we are sensitive again to the idea of making this something that people aren't hating because the trains are coming through and blasting their horns. As I said, I've been waking up at 5 a.m. in Boca and saying, all right, well, that's what it was like before, but we need to make sure that we protect our residents from themselves.
Okay,
thank you very much for the presentation. All right. I'm sorry.
Sorry, just quickly, you mentioned both the RAISE grant and then the other infrastructure bill grants. I was curious if you know if education components are available for funding, not just the infrastructure, but education.
They are community outreach, additional policing. They're really very broad. And West Palm has, I think, already explored some of those grant opportunities, but I'll be sure to follow up with each of your staffs directly on those grant opportunities.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
Again, thank you, Kim, and thank you very much. Thanks. All right, we're going to move on now to Palm Tran Glades regional update. And before Clinton starts, I may be stealing his thunder, but he's giving free rides on Election Day. And we really are very excited about that opportunity. Nobody has a reason not to go to the polls on November 8th but whether it's Go Glades or Palm Tran or whatever service they have available, you can get on and you can get off, you can vote and go back home. So with that, Clinton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for that PSA. members, Clinton Forbes, the Executive Director of Palm Tran. We're here today to provide a brief update on our Go Glades service in the Western community. We'd like to talk about wins at Palm Tran, and this is definitely a huge win for Palm Tran, for the Western community, and Palm Beach County overall. This is a win. It's a success story. So we'd like to share this with you. And I guess off the bat, I'd like to just thank the leadership in that community, starting with Commissioner McKinley and Mayor Wilson, as well as Mayor Babb and Kyles. You know, it was from their effort is how we got this really project across the line, including the Florida Department of Transportation. So thank you, Commissioner and Mayor. To start, this is our agenda for today. We'll talk about, you know, the history a little bit, about the history of the service description, the technology that's really been a game changer for the service, some of the performance indicators, and our recent direction in September that we received from the Board of County Commissioners. A little about the history. This project started out as a pilot in 2018, and it started from our Route Performance Maximization Initiative. As you may recall, in 2018, we redesigned the entire bus network to make it more usable, more direct, and more frequent. And so in doing that for the Western community, we merged two of the fixed route services that were out there. Routes 47 and 48 merged. And you know what we recognize in the Western community, which is a beautiful community, there are some road infrastructure issues. And for a 40-foot, 35,000-pound fixed route bus, it's not very conducive for operating in that community. So we did merge two routes and worked with the state and the community to begin implementing smaller buses, which we called, you know, at that time, the Go Glades flex routes. And just interestingly enough, this was a lesson learned for me in that community. And I'm usually pretty good with understanding the genetics of a community. But when we were introducing this service to the community in the public meetings, I was trying to describe the service to the community, relating it to its operating characteristics, such as Uber and Lyft. And as I talked to the community, I said, well, it would operate similar to Uber and Lyft. And the community responded and said, we don't have Uber and Lyft out here, and nor do we have taxis. And so that was an eye-opening experience for me, and a little lesson learned to really understand the genetics of a community. And so, you know, this service, as we introduced to this community, was really gladly accepted by the community. So it started out as a flex service. We then provided, you know, updates to the board on the progress of the service. And of course, COVID hit in 2020. And, you know, with COVID, one of the silver, I think we can find a lot of silver linings in crisis. You know, I always say crisis breeds innovation. And that's what happened with this service, because we started out as a flex service where the service was a little confusing because it would be a circulator, then it would deviate upon request. So it was a little confusing for the community. During COVID, we changed it from a flex service to a full on-demand service, where people would actually call and hail the ride, and because we wanted to control the capacity and riders on the vehicle. We didn't want to have packed vehicles, so we wanted to know who was riding on a smaller vehicle. So we switched it to a dollar ride to control the capacity. And lo and behold, that was the service model we should have gone with all the time, because the ridership soared after we switched it to the dollar ride. We then, of course, continue to provide updates to the board. We have a very active labor union at Palm Tran, and they begin to you know, ask questions about the service and look at commonality of interest for Palm Tran directly operating the service. Currently, the operating model is contracted out. And so the Board of County Commissioners asked us to endeavor in evaluating a benefit cost analysis of whether the service should continue to be contracted out or directly operated by Palm Tran. So we did that in June of 2021. We converted the service to a fully mobility on demand service with the introduction of VIA technology, ride hailing software similar to Uber and Lyft. We extended the contract in June, and we do have an update recently from the board in September, and we'll go through that later in the presentation. Just the service description really briefly. This slide shows all the service in Palm Beach County, including the eastern parts of Palm Beach County, which there are 31 fixed routes. And in the Glades region, we have fixed route paratransit and now mobility on demand. As you can see, we have three modes: fixed route, paratransit, mobility on demand, which is our third mode. So if we had light rail, that would be a fourth mode recognized by the Federal Transit Administration. If we had ferries, we'll have five modes. So currently we have three with the introduction of mobility on demand. And of course, paratransit. A little more on the service description: operates 7 days a week. The fare is $2 per trip. You can book it on the web, the phone, or with our app. And if you hold a Palm Tran pass or fare media, you ride at no additional cost. A little more on the service description of the population of the Grades. This area in the Western community is ideal for a micro transit option because it's almost like a concentric zone. And the population is roughly over 40,000. 110 square miles, and we operate nine cutaway smaller vehicles, 12 passenger vehicles for this service. The introduction of the technology, the ride hailing technology similar to Uber and Lyft, was a real game changer for this service. It improves scheduling and routing. The Florida Department of Transportation was a funding partner for this service. And we'll talk more. And so we introduced that in February 8th of 2022. And here is really a juxtaposition of a Lyft app and the Go Glades app provided by Via. And the trip experience and the cadence is very similar. And just an illustration here, as you can see with Go Glades, you enter your destination. It finds your route. It shows you just like Uber and Lyft. It gives you the direction and provides the fare. Very similar to Uber and Lyft. And of course, this is an example of Lyft. Oh, was it running? Okay. All right, and that's Lyft. All right. And so, if you'd like to download the app, you can point your iPhone to those QR codes. If you have a Apple phone, you go to the Apple Store and download it, or point your phone to that QR code. If you're unfortunate to have an Android, you can point your phone to the Google Play QR code, or download it for Google Play on the web. A little more about service performance: highly rated in terms of customer satisfaction, nearly five rating for five out of five for customer satisfaction. The trip length in terms of ride duration is about 17 minutes. We have more than 3,000 app installs. Passengers are up to nearly 9,000 boardings per month. Service productivity is 4 passengers per hour. And agent booking is now at 80%. Those are the bookings that when customers call our call center and they actually book the trip. But that used to be 100%. But with the introduction of the app, it's now down to 80%, and 20% now are actually using the app to book their trips. And that continues to grow. The ridership is just is going through the roof. I mean, it's tremendous. As you can see on this graph, it continues to go up. With that one exception during, of course, COVID-19, that precipitous dip in ridership. But from 19 to 20, 20%, nearly 20% increase in ridership. From 20 to 21, over 26% increase in ridership. And you can see, starting from June, we broke every ridership record every month as the ridership continues to go up. From 677 riders when we first started this to over nearly 9,000 boardings every month for this service. And in September, you see a small decline in ridership. And I you probably can guess why that happened. And that was the 2 days of service that we did not have because of Hurricane Ian. And of course, this service, again, is a win. It continues to be recognized both locally and nationally. This is Passenger Transport, which is our industry periodical, the American Public Transportation Association. And they essentially touted, this service this periodical. Now, just kind of switching, and there's a lot more involved in this benefit cost analysis, but just to share with you what we provided to the board of that analysis that was provided by our consultant WSP, because the question was asked whether we should continue to operate this using contractor service or should we directly operate it? And this essentially was the answer. It costs nearly three times as much to insource or directly operate this using PalmTran. And so we'll continue at this time to continue to contract it out. It's roughly $1.3 million to continue to contract it out, and $3.2 million to directly operate it. And interestingly enough, the savings that we generated when we merged Route 47 and 48 was roughly $1 million in savings. And again, the direction that was provided by the board on September 20th, because our contract with the current vendor expires at the end of this year, the BCC approved an extension of the existing contract for 1 year. in order for staff to prepare, advertise, and hopefully award a two-year contract, which will include language that incentivizes potential bidders to offer increased competitive wages and benefits in their proposals. The board also included in its direction that in the event a new revenue source is secured, contingent upon board approval, ATU and PalmTran will work collaboratively to transition the operation of the GoGlades to Palm Beach County. And we have Mr. Von Laren here who can talk more about that and who has also provided leadership oversight of this project. Now, I know most of you from different municipalities on the eastern part of the county, you're wondering like, that probably will look good in my community. One of the things that we did do as a part of our transportation development plan is we did begin to evaluate the success of this and how can it be applied on the eastern part of the county. With our, what we call an RPM 2.0 roadmap, and I'm referring to it as a three-pronged approach, a short-term, a mid-term, and a long-term prong. The first prong is first and last mile, which is being implemented all across the country. And that's an approach which leveraging Uber and Lyft to remove that obstacle of making that first mile to a transit route or a train. And so that's something that we're working on. That's something that Mr. Von Laren would like to have happened yesterday. and so we're working on that. The second prong is mobility on demand. We're exploring other areas in the eastern part of the county where we can apply the success of GoGlades, this micro transit option. And of course, the 561 plan that the TPA is taking leadership of. And of course, we are a partner with them on that. And so we looked at also our peers who are providing microtransit operations in their communities. In Orlando, they have 11 communities where they provide this microtransit option. And they don't have much success with it because they have the model that we started out with, which was a flex system that's a deviated system. So they haven't had as much success as PalmTran has had with its service. Central Ohio Transit Authority, much success with their microtransit option. They have the ride-hailing app similar to PalmTran. They have this service in four of their communities. And of course, GoGlades. And so we've looked at the entire county, where our consultants looked at the entire county. This is just two examples of one of the highly rated areas that has the characteristics and the criteria that meets a mobility on its demand zone, Riviera Beach and Royal Palm. You know, when you look at the demographics in terms of the population and the productivity, the performance of the existing fixed route services in the area. And so we looked at these, and these are really prime for consideration for a mobility on demand, but there are 10 other zones that we looked at as a part of this study that are not shown here. But essentially, we also looked at what are some of the funding opportunities to introduce this service in different communities. Well, one of the approaches of how we got GoGlades is we partnered, of course, with the Florida Department of Transportation, and we streamlined the existing fixed route. Not only streamline the existing fixed route in the area, but the entire network, which helped fund the service in the GoGlades. Here, we would do similar, where we could potentially streamline the service in the respective area of a community, the fixed route service, and generate some savings from that. But it won't be as much savings as we did with the entire RPM in 2018, because we did the entire network. But it will be complementary to the fixed route service. So for example, in Royal Palm Beach, Route 52 exists, which is a very circuitous route. You know, straightening that route will provide some savings. And that savings, of course, could not fully fund a mobility on demand zone, but it can contribute to some of the funding. One of the ways that other communities in Broward County and in Orlando and in Dakota one of the funding approaches that they're using to fund these types of services is really partnering with the local municipalities to fund the new service. And so that's a funding option approach. And of course, you know, looking for a new revenue source. And of course, Ms. Nielsen and Mr. Von Laren could talk more about, you know, what we're doing in that effort. And so that concludes our presentation, providing you an update on the success of the Go Glaze project. Our next information item we hope to share with you is information about our Bell Shelter and Stop Improvement Plan, hopefully at the next meeting. So, Madam Vice Chair, that concludes our presentation.
Thank you so much. Do we have any public comment cards?
Not at this time, Madam Chair.
All right. Are there any comments from our members or anything else from staff at all?
Yes, Madam Chair. I just want to go on the record to let Mr. Ford know that the Glaze community, Bell Glaze, South Bend, Pahokee, and the surrounding on the corporate areas, we're well pleased with the service that you guys have been providing to our community. Oftentimes when you're talking about public transportation, you're going to get a lot of concerns one way or another. But in the Glaze, they're pretty happy with the on-demand. It's almost like curbside service they're getting to the Glaze community. We want to say thank you. I won't sing to you, but I want to say thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Wilson, for singing earlier and for not singing now. Okay, so Mayor Koretsky.
Just a quick item. Number one, and I'm not asking, well, I'm really intrigued about everything I just heard here. I'm intrigued because I represent a community that tried to experiment with transit in our community with the trolley some years ago, and it didn't work. And so I sit here today still having a paradigm. Transit really isn't going to work in communities like ours. And even like when we were planning a tri-rail station at one time, when everybody always was fixated on the people around the tri-rail station, I always asked, how do I get the other 99% of our community to be linked? So I do think there's probably some gold to be mined in what you have for way beyond maybe what you intended it to be, because, you know, when we're advocating, whatever that is a few years ago, for a mobility fee, we have to realize how many people don't feel connected to, you know, to anything. And just the awareness of this kind of this service may open up minds about it. So I'd like to get more information on that. I was interested with the 10 others. Certainly the Glades, we needed to do that, and 110% behind that. And I don't know, I still don't know whether it's per se ever to be cost effective in my community, but I want to be open to that, because again, I don't know how we're going to get people to vote for mobility fee other than those that live in the high density areas. So anything that you did outside of, you referred to the east, but then you had Royal Palm Beach. I was intrigued to see that. And you talked about, you looked at 10 other areas. That information just might be gold to just look at, right? Expand our thought, because now you've just, there's tremendous lesson learned from that. I'm dated, you know, on our experience was a decade ago, right? Come a long way. So again, appreciate if you could share with me, send me whatever you can.
We'll be happy to do that.
Thank you.
Thank you, board member.
Anyone else? No? All right, and thank you so much. And I know you've done a great job presenting us with all the exciting things happening at Palm Tran, between the bus shelters being redone to the electric buses coming on. And when you discussed that, you did talk about consideration of mobility on demand and microtransit. So we're excited to see more from you. So thank you for always being so clear and connecting with us. And thank you to our county for supporting Palm Tran. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, sir. All right, are there any other partner agencies today that are presenting? Yes,
Madam.
Sir.
Madam Chair, just one thing. I think we will be remiss if we didn't mention this. Mayor Weinroth mentioned free rides on Election Day. I'm glad, you know, I see transit as the great equalizer, so we're happy about that. But we also would like to announce that two of Palm Tran bus operators were recognized as the top bus operators in the state of Florida. So from the Florida Public Transportation Association, we were recognized for having the top two bus operators in the state. So we took home both first and second prize for having the best bus operators in the state of Florida.
Wow. Congratulations. That's great.
And that's Miss Loretta, bus operator Loretta Fuegos, and Murray Seabrook. Thank you, Madam Chair.
If the board will indulge me, we all congratulate them. If you could pass it along from our TPA board, we'd appreciate it. Thank you. That's wonderful. That's especially in these days where it's so hard to find bus drivers. And you guys are doing an amazing job doing that. And the culture here is reflective of that. We appreciate it so much. All right, no other partner agencies. So we're going to move on to administrative items. These are only information for the board. There are no staff presentations on these items unless one of our board members requests it. So would any board members like any information regarding any of the administrative items on the agenda at all? Seeing none, our next meeting is December 15th. We do not have a November meeting, so we are adjourned. Thank you all so much.